A very good afternoon from Athens, Greece. I am Kayra Martinez, the founder and director of Love Without Borders for Refugees in Need. So we are very happy to have been working with dozens of students from abroad, from America, North America, Canada, and the Middle East even, and some others from around the world, mostly from France and America. And today I'm with Saeeda. She has been here back in 2019. A very big welcome to you, Saeeda.
Thank you for having me.
And we're really happy that this actually came into fruition, because you were able to come here with NYIT back in 2019 on a shorter trip at the time. And did you ever imagine that you would be able to spend such a long amount of time with us here at Love Without Borders?
I never thought I'd come for this long of a time, but I always wanted to come back for sure. So I'm glad to be here.
Yes, it's really so great that you're here. And this is the eighth week already that you've been in Athens with Love Without Borders. And it's interesting for people, I think, in America and Europe to imagine their lives, how pretty much simple, and we are very privileged with everything that we have in our daily routines. And I think it would be good to tell our audience today about the situation for refugees that are in Greece. And a lot of people can't even imagine that people are on the street, that they don't have food to eat, they don't have apartments. And we're seeing this every single day. So I guess for you, it's probably really hard to have imagined the situation for the people living here.
I think it's a big difference when you hear about the situation from like living somewhere abroad or like further from the place that it's happening, to when you actually, you know, meet the people that are going through these struggles. It's a very, very big difference. Like, you can try and imagine, and you can read so much on the difficulties, but when you actually see the person trying to go about their day, and you see how many different struggles they have to face just to complete one task, for instance, that's kind of when you get to understand a bit more as to like what the reality is like.
Exactly. And unfortunately, we've had to see that quite often this week. We've had many cases of single men with children, women with children come by this week asking for food and asking for a simple home to live in while they're waiting for their asylum case. And that's pretty hard to accept when you think that we're in 2024 with massive amounts of resources. Mm-hmm. And this is how Love Without Borders is trying to spend our time here in Greece and really find ways where we can find the basic necessities in order to support these families. So we're really happy to have you here and spend the amount of time that you're spending. It's been very helpful. We would like to explain a little bit more about occupational therapy for those that aren't aware of this, and if you could just perhaps give us a little bit more information about your studies.
Yeah, of course. Before we talk about occupational therapy, I think it's important to define what are occupations. A lot of times I'll tell people, oh, I'm a student of occupational therapy, I'm studying occupational therapy. I get a whole bunch of different responses. So a lot of times I'll tell people, yeah, I'm an occupational therapy student. They're like, oh, you help people find jobs. And I'm like, well, if that's something that they need help with, I can. More recently, when I tell people like, oh yeah, I'm studying occupational therapy, they're like, occupations? And they're like the occupation of Palestine? And I'm like, no, wrong occupation. But so occupations are basically anything that you do in your day, that anyone does in their day, that brings them meaning and purpose. It's anything that people engage with and occupy their time with that just brings them a reason to live in life. And as human beings, it's our nature. We are all occupational beings, and we need to have things that really bring us meaning just to move forward in life. It's an occupational right, and it's also considered a human right of ours. So occupational therapy, it's a healthcare profession that helps us recover, develop, or maintain participation in meaningful tasks, activities, roles, or occupations. So maybe we can give some examples. So Kayra, what did you do this morning? The first thing, when you woke up in the morning, what did you do?
So my morning ritual is usually trying to say a little mantra for Thanksgiving, being grateful.
Okay.
And I usually sit outside. I have a beautiful terrace mm-hmm. overlooking the city, and that's my only downtime of the whole day and night. So.
Okay. Okay. Did you did you make yourself breakfast? Did you take a shower? Did you go for a walk? Did you do any of these things?
Yes. Yeah. So I took a shower. I made a fruit drink, and I went straight to work.
Okay, awesome. So you just mentioned so many different occupations. You mentioned taking a shower, which that is the occupation of self-care and hygiene. You talked about making breakfast, making a smoothie. So that right there you were participating in the occupation of eating. So all of these are actually considered, they're called activities of daily living. They're the most basic form of occupations. But then you came to work, and so that's kind of like a step up in the kind of occupation where you came here and you helped the family, which involves so many other different activities and tasks.
Where do I begin? So we had several cases where a small family with a father and a child about 12 years old came in, and they didn't have money, mm-hmm. nor food, nor a place to live. Mm-hmm. So it's important with our work that we meet the people face to face in order to help them and understand them. We couldn't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. We had no translator here. Mm-hmm. but what I did is I took the child out of the office because I thought that it would even bring her more stress to have her listen to this all over again. Mm-hmm. So it was great to have you and Ahmed here to take the child and let her set her up so she could paint. Mm-hmm. And that's what Love Without Borders is all about, is just finding ways. Art is our healing power, and it's always there for us. And so it was really great to let that little girl get out of the office and get into a place where she could just paint and share her story.
And so right there, you mentioned so many different things going on, but that was your occupation of being the founder and the organizer of this nonprofit. So with that one occupation, you had so many different tasks and so many different different activities and roles that you had to fulfill to do that occupation. So for example, when you invited that family to come in, you were speaking with them, you were trying to engage with them. Even though you didn't know the language, you were using different tools to be able to communicate. So you tried Google Translate, tried to get a translator. So as an occupational therapy student, it is important for me to look at the environment and to see how we can facilitate just helping people's situation. So if it's using different tools, if it's maybe changing the environment, all these things are related.
Yeah, this is really a good explanation, and I think a lot of people are really grateful for, you know, our work together to be able to support so many people this week especially. And we try to use as you mentioned, just, you know, very importance of perhaps not promising the people that we're going to give them a house mm-hmm. or something, but to let them know that we're here for them. Mm-hmm. They can come back. This is an open space for them. This is really how you start to build community, and that's why we're really thankful for the gallery.
Yeah,
and
for sure. Community participation and social participation is actually another area of occupation that we focus on as OT students. And I think that's what makes this site, like Love Without Borders, a very good like environment for people in general. But this is where I see the connection between occupational therapy and your organization. You provide people with very basic necessities such as housing, such as food, such as like monetary assistance just to get by, which is very vital. Like, it's very basic but very vital. But you also facilitate so many different activities that people may not think of when you're dealing with people from this community. Basic necessities are very important, but we forget about like the different hobbies of people, the different activities that really bring people joy, that really kind of get people excited. And I've seen that so many times when you give anybody a canvas, an empty canvas, a bunch of acrylic paint and two paintbrushes, like you just see how much involved people get, whether they've painted before, whether they are very skilled artists or they're not. You're giving them something that brings them joy, and there is so much evidence on how these creative activities, different art activities and with different art mediums, really does something in terms of promoting health and well-being for individuals.
Yes, we didn't realize the power of art, and that how much art can actually support one human being, but we've witnessed it thousands of times now, and we use that as our main source of support and income for the refugee community. Mm-hmm. So it's I did a TED talk on that back in 2019. It was the last one before COVID hit. And it's about the power of art, and it's quite intriguing and quite interesting how powerful it is and how it can really change people's lives, especially from this community of refugees that are they don't have a lot of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And by offering those simple tools without anything else, you can really change somebody's life.
Yeah, for sure. Like you mentioned, people not having the opportunities. And I think that's something, again, that really kind of shows the bridge between the field of occupational therapy and your organization. When people think of occupational therapy, a lot of times they think of, oh, like, okay, somebody gets injured physically, and now they, you know, they can't participate in what they want to do. You know, for example, if I break my arm, I might have a hard time cooking my own food, brushing my own teeth. And so I won't be able to do my hobbies of photography or reading. I can't hold up a book. But people forget that it's not just like a physical injury or trauma, but people can also experience psychological trauma and also limitations from the environment. And when you're looking at displaced communities, refugee communities, that's all there. Like, I mean, for sure you might have physical trauma, but imagine the psychological trauma and the limiting environment. And just to let people know that, for example, if someone is in a refugee camp, okay, you don't have access to all these things. Your environment is very limiting to do your basic needs, whether it's self-hygiene, whether it's cooking. But then imagine not being able to do all the things that you just want to do, whether it's education, work, leisure, social participation. That's all very limited. So the space that you have here, the gallery, it allows all of these occupations to be facilitated. And that's huge.
Yes, we're really looking forward to the next few months where we can actually bring those displaced persons from the refugee camp into the gallery And it really doesn't matter what we're doing with them. We're just really anxious to get them out of that environment and into the gallery where they can paint, create art, make music, dance. The kids are really, they just love it so much. And our goal is just to bring those people out of the camps because they're really unacceptable that they're 2024, as I mentioned, with so many resources and people still have to live in these refugee camps. So even with our housing project, we try one family at a time to take them out of the camps and get them into an apartment. And it's critical in order for them to move on with their lives, in order to heal and to spend all the time that they're waiting on their asylum process in a healthy environment, to be able to be in a house. It's something that I can't explain to people more than ever, but this is where we're, you know, fortunate that we have the space to do so.
Yeah, I think that's really important that you mentioned that. I think a lot of people are not aware of the fact that in the process of, like, in the process of being in between having received your asylum to the next stage, people are just left to fend for themselves. They can't go back to the refugee camp, and they don't have the monetary assistance to get a place of their own, and you facilitate that. And I think that's very important that people know that in that very vulnerable time, you are providing all of these different opportunities. So that's very, very important.
Yes, I think people perhaps aren't quite aware that once people do get asylum in Greece, they're not allowed to stay in the refugee camp. And we're talking about thousands of people. So the last 2 years, we had an influx of people that got refugee asylum granted. And then afterwards, they got kicked out of the camps. So we had hundreds of people on the street, and they have no training or no way to work. And so it was a really horrible situation. So we're trying to work with other organizations so that we can refer them so that they can start learning languages and getting skill trainings for jobs, because it's a very long process, as you can imagine. And even today we had somebody that came in and he doesn't speak any English at all. So I can't imagine in a couple months when he does get his refugee asylum, the positive claim, that what will he do?
Right.
He doesn't have any opportunity actually without the language or without a language.
Right.
So this is where we are stuck a little bit, because the people need a home. But they also really need to take a step back. I think if you look at the big scheme of things, you need to start with the basics and a home and the English or Greek language. Both of those are so important, and many people don't have either one of them.
Right.
So we're going very back to basics here.
Yeah. You're providing the occupation of education to allow people to move to the next step of their life.
Yes, exactly. So you're in your eighth week now here in Athens, and you still have approximately four more weeks.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the time that you spent already and the last 4 weeks that you have with Love Without Borders?
It's been a really nice time here. I think the most beneficial thing for me has just been being solely, being very immersed in the environment. And I think, like I mentioned before, like you cannot know what people are going through. I still don't know what people are going through, but maybe I just know a little bit more than what I did because I've spent time with some people who are from the displaced community. It's been really nice to be able to help and provide different meaningful and different occupational workshops. I think the best part is like when I get to sit with the kids and I ask them, oh, like just what is it that you really want to do? What is it that you used to love to do, but you can't because of the environment that you're in and your situation? And they'll tell me things like, I love to cook. I love to do art. I love to like create this and make bracelets. And I love like stitching things. And, you know, they just tell me all of these different hobbies they had, all of these different occupations, but they can't participate in them because of their situation. So being able to kind of like organize that for them and facilitate that for them, it's been the best part. But it's also something that I've had to keep in mind is how unpredictable people's lives can be. You know, you might make a plan today that you are gonna come to the gallery tomorrow and partake in this workshop, but you might get a call that you need to go and get this appointment taken care of, or something came up with your asylum case, and you're gonna have to shift your whole day around. For me, all I have to do is shift my workshop around, but for everybody else, you're literally shifting your lives. You're shifting your lives around your asylum situation, and that's something so important that I think people don't know. And that's just one more thing added to adding a struggle in somebody's day.
Yes, I find that the consistency is very mm-hmm. difficult, because right. even if we have the gallery open Monday through Friday, we see that many of the people sometimes don't show up, and we don't know if that has to do with them, mm-hmm. you know, having an appointment or what have you. But consistency is very difficult in this country, for sure, with the refugee community. There's many reasons for that, and I think that we just try to be as flexible, and we understand when we do have students and professors and teachers, we tell them how fluid the situation is. And sometimes if we have plans with a few families, one family could travel off to another European city, or, you know, have appointments, as you mentioned. So yeah. we have to be very flexible, and we just try to provide as much as we can.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yes, we're looking forward to the last 4 weeks. We have some really exciting programs that we're offering in the gallery. We're doing a meditative art project next week, and we're having a pop-up event this Thursday with some of our Greek friends. So every day is a different day in the Love Without Borders gallery, but it has a lot of love and a lot of possibilities to share with our community. So we're super happy to have you as a part of our team. And
I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you so much for today.
All right, thank you, Kira.